Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Ministerial Exception in Elementary School Teachers Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On October 5, 2011, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Hosanna Tabor Church versus EEOC. This case presents the question of whether the ministerial exception to federal employment discrimination statutes, an exception that generally shields religious organizations from claims of unlawful discrimination by employees who perform religious functions, applies to a teacher at a religious elementary school. To discuss the case, we have Mark Rienzi, who is a professor at the Columbus School of Law at Catholic University. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Rienzi.
On Tuesday, October 5th, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in the case of Hosanna Tabor Lutheran Church and School versus Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The case concerns a doctrine called the ministerial exception. At a very general level, the ministerial exception is a doctrine that precludes courts from hearing certain lawsuits between a church and its ministers. The idea is that the separation of church and state, whatever its exact contours, should at least mean that the government should not be in the business of deciding who should or should not hold a position as a minister of any particular faith. This idea is uncontroversial when applied to certain laws. For example, Title VII of the Civil Rights Act has expressed language that would let a synagogue discriminate against non-Jews when hiring a rabbi. Thus, no court would ever hear a case of a Christian who claims religious discrimination because he couldn't get a job as a rabbi. The ministerial exception becomes more controversial, however, when applied to alleged discrimination on grounds other than religion, where there is often less express statutory protection. Different courts and scholars have located the doctrine in different places in the Constitution, as part of a church's right to the free exercise of religion, as stemming from the Establishment Clause doctrine that the government cannot be in the business of picking ministers, and as part of the First Amendment protection for the freedom of association. But until last week, the Supreme Court had never directly confronted the question. Often when a case gets to the Supreme Court, it's because there is a split in the circuits. Yet on the ministerial exception, there has actually been broad agreement among the circuits for roughly 40 years. The issue that has divided the circuits has not been whether the doctrine exists, they generally agree that it does, but exactly whom it covers. In other words, who counts as a minister? That's the question the Hosanna Tabor case brings into sharp relief for the Supreme Court. The case arises out of an employment dispute between Hosanna Tabor and Cheryl Perich, who used to teach at Hosanna Tabor's Lutheran Elementary School. As a teacher at the school, Ms. Perich fulfilled a variety of duties, some of which are expressly religious, and some of which are at least arguably secular. On the religious side, Ms. Perich taught the students religion classes for 30 minutes each day. She led them in several prayers each day. She took them to school worship services, and she sometimes led those worship services. In fact, in order to hold her position at the school on a long-term basis, Perich was required to take university-level theology courses and was officially recognized as a minister by the church, even taking federal tax exemptions for ministers. Still, Ms. Perich also performed duties that were at least arguably secular. She taught math and science and English and social studies. And when the school could not find enough teachers who were recognized as ministers, it would hire teachers with lesser theological qualifications on a contract basis. Those teachers, like Perich, would have religious duties. Ms. Perich ultimately needed to take a disability leave because of what turned out to be narcolepsy. When her doctor eventually cleared her to return to work, the school did not immediately want to take her back. They had hired someone else to teach in her absence. And a dispute arose between Ms. Perich and the school. During the dispute, Ms. Perich threatened to sue the school. According to the church, threatening to sue is a violation of church doctrine. Lutheran church teachings strictly forbid church members from suing one another in court. It is a violation of the church's teaching to resolve differences in civil courts rather than through the church, a belief the church derives from some parts of the New Testament. Because of the threatened suit, Hosanna Tabor fired Ms. Perich. Ms. Perich asserts that the firing is illegal retaliation under the Americans with Disabilities Act. Essentially, an employer is not permitted to retaliate against an employee simply for asserting her rights under the ADA. Hosanna Tabor responds that this is precisely the type of suit that the ministerial exception was designed to address. There is simply no way for the courts to give Ms. Perich relief without either ordering the church to take her back as a minister and teacher of the faith, or awarding damages based on the claim that she should have been permitted to continue in that role. Hosanna Tabor argues that this means that any such suit would violate the church's free exercise of religion, would violate the Establishment Clause ban on government selection of ministers and would violate its rights of free association. They think that because she has violated church doctrine, she is no longer fit to hold her position and to teach religion to the students. In the church's view, the ministerial exception necessarily extends to Ms. Parrish, because no matter what else she does, she has clearly ministerial duties in that she is hired to teach religious doctrine to children. At the Supreme Court, the federal government, representing the EEOC, filed a brief supporting Ms. Parrish. The government argued that the ministerial exception, to the extent it exists at all, is reserved only for those employees who have solely religious functions. Under this reading, Ms. Parrish could not be a minister because she spends much of the day teaching secular subjects like math, English, and science. At the oral argument, counsel for the church, Doug Laycock from the University of Virginia, argued first. He was pressed by the court as to how to draw the line for the ministerial exception. He argued that so long as the person has significant religious duties, the courts have no business ordering a church to take the employee back or penalizing a church for the firing, regardless of what else that employee does. Justice Sotomayor pressed Laycock as to whether his theory would even extend to a church that fired an employee for reporting sexual abuse, noting the government's obviously strong interest in encouraging people to report such abuse. Mr. Laycock responded that this was a difficult case and that the government remained free to use a wide range of laws to encourage reporting, such as mandatory reporting laws, but that they should not be able to order reinstatement of the minister. Justice Alito responded by asking whether, over the 40 years of the doctrine's existence, the courts had experienced any of the types of cases suggested by Justice Sotomayor. Mr. Laycock said that they had not. Justice Kennedy repeatedly expressed concern during the argument about the fact that the church's approach would mean that employees could not even get a hearing to determine whether the ministerial exception should apply. During Mr. Laycock's argument, Justice Breyer suggested that perhaps there was a statutory solution under the Americans with Disabilities Act, in that one of the provisions of the act seemed to allow a religious group to only hire employees who shared their religious faith. Mr. Laycock argued that this would not solve the problem. In part, in this case, there are also state law claims that would not be resolved by an interpretation of the ADA. Justice Alito responded that any inquiry into whether the church's asserted reason was a pretext would necessarily involve the court wading into issues of church doctrine. Is this really the church's doctrine? How important is the doctrine to the church? The types of questions that courts generally have no business deciding, according to Justice Alito. For the United States, Leandra Kruger, an assistant solicitor general, presented the argument. Ms. Kruger argued that the only protection for a ministerial exception comes through the right of free association and not through either the free exercise clause or the establishment clause. Justice Scalia immediately remarked that this position was extraordinary. He pointed out that the Constitution, in his words, black on white, says that religion is different in that it has a free exercise clause and it has an establishment clause. Justice Scalia also made clear that he believed the government was overreading the opinion he wrote in Employment Division versus Smith. He said that case concerned only individual free exercise of religion, and that questions concerning who can or cannot be a minister at a church also involved the Establishment Clause. Justice Kagan, too, called the government's position on this point amazing. She, too, appeared to believe that the Establishment Clause and Free Exercise Clause mean that religious groups have different rights that go beyond the mere free association rights that would apply to a secular group, such as a union. The justices pressed the government as to whether the theory they are presenting would allow courts to order the Catholic Church to allow female priests. In other words, the justices were asking whether the government was simply favoring the idea of a Catholic all-male priesthood over the Lutheran belief that civil suits are barred. The government said that its position would not allow challenges to the Catholic all-male priesthood, and it would allow challenges to the Lutheran no civil suits belief. But the government said the difference lied in the strength of the government's interests, and that the government's interests in encouraging reporting of violations of the ADA was stronger in this suit than it would be than the government's interest would be in opposing an all-male Catholic priesthood. Justice Breyer, for one, clearly did not seem to buy this distinction. He said he has no way to put those two interests on a scale and figure out that one of those interests is actually stronger than the other. Finally, the administration offered a distinction between a church operating internally as to its own religious beliefs, which the government suggested would be let alone, and, quote, a church that has decided to open its doors to the public and provide the service of educating children for a fee. The government was suggesting that once the church opens its doors to the public to provide the service of educating children, it necessarily must bow to government discrimination laws, even on issues such as who would teach children religion classes at the school. Finally, for Cheryl Perich, former Solicitor General Walter Dellinger made the argument. As soon as Dellinger stood up, Justice Kagan immediately asked him to simply assume the existence of a ministerial exception and to explain its contours and how they were implicated in this case. Pressed on the definition, Mr. Dellinger said that the ministerial exception should only apply to employees who have exclusively religious duties, and that someone cannot qualify as a minister if he or she carries out important secular functions. Chief Justice Roberts seemed openly skeptical of this position. He pointed out that even the Pope doesn't satisfy that test because he clearly has important secular functions in addition to his religious functions. In conclusion, it seems likely from the argument that there will be a majority of the justices to say that a ministerial exception exists and that it is based in part on the religion clauses. Likely votes for this position would be the four most conservative members of the court, Chief Justice Roberts, along with Justices Scalia, Alito, and Thomas, along with Justice Kagan and perhaps Justice Breyer, all of whom seem to see some religious basis for the doctrine. It's a much closer question where the court will come out as to whether Ms. Perich qualifies as a minister or not. There was clearly some debate and disagreement among the justices and the parties as to whether she actually qualifies, and no clear indication emerged from the argument as to which way the court will go on that issue. Accordingly, we'll have to wait a few months to find out the exact contours of the ministerial exception.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.